Future CEOs, Episode 6.
So you want to be a CEO? Sure, go ahead, read your ABCs of Managing book. Or if you really want to be a CEO, then keep on listening to this Future CEOs podcast with your host, Gareth Armstrong, as he gets you up close and personal with real-world CEOs, thought leaders, and industry experts to learn from their experiences and the insight and wisdom they've gained while leading in these challenging and ever-changing times. Are you ready? Then let's do this.
Welcome to Future CEOs. My name is Gareth Armstrong. After a number of days of technical issues and difficulties that we've been facing, I'm very pleased that we're back and able to bring this interview to you today. Let me introduce today's CEO guest this way. In his own words, Will Harris is the world's worst CA, or chartered accountant. This reclusive operator is drawn to the excitement and challenge of building disruptive ventures. He is a hands-on partner in businesses ranging from fashion to advertising to technology to commercial property. He's blessed to be surrounded by talented and inspirational partners. He attended Rhodes University, where he studied accounts, and after qualifying as a CA from KPMG in Johannesburg, he worked at their San Francisco office, where his primary client was Silicon Valley Bank. On the back of a stint at Sasol and a three-year deep dive into the world of commercial property, business data and software, he turned to creating businesses and has been independent since. This was a conversation that was as insightful as it was entertaining, and I hope you take as much from it as I was able to. Will Harris, CEO of GMaven, welcome to Future CEOs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Armstrong.
I've not been called Mr. Armstrong by someone who is so close to my age before, so you're welcome to call me Gareth, and I'm going to call you Will. So we appreciate you coming and sharing your journey and your story with us. Let's begin with a little bit of an introduction to you. Just give us a brief overview, your background, how you got to this point.
Born in Joburg, spent my formative years, I'd say, down in Natal. I went to Maritzburg College, grew up in Hilton, went to Rhodes University afterwards, where leaders learn, studied accounts, managed to pass in a lot of time, and then went on to KPMG, finished articles, did some time in the States with them, with San Francisco, funny enough, at Silicon Valley Bank, they were our primary client, went back to Sasol, and then actively have been independent since then.
How did the independence come about? So give us a little bit of background there.
I got offered quite a nice job. I was quite young to go be 2IC of quite a small division in Sasol Gas down in Durban. And I was quite reluctant to leave my mates in Joburg. And one of my mates' dads heard about it. And he's the top broker of commercial property in South Africa, a chap by the name of Jeff Caradoc Davies. He just got me to join his back office. The maths is quite simple. You can spend 10 to 15 years as a CA plugging away. Your objective every day is to not make a mistake. Your reward is to not get in trouble. Or you can get involved in the cut and thrust of business quickly off the bat. And that's what being involved in his commercial property brokerage back office gave me a chance to do. I worked with the chap for a while. We couldn't come to terms. And my only option was to exit and start from scratch.
So starting from scratch is quite an interesting place to be starting from. Just talk us through that a little bit, because we have a lot of entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs that are listening to this as well. Just talk us through some of the feelings that you had there, some of the general things that you faced as you did that.
Okay, some good context to that little tale is I've been making money quite nicely on the stock market from when I started articles in 2003. I think in 2003, the JSE was around 7,000, 8,000. I'm going to run to about 23,000 by 2008. And there was that story about a rising tide and all ships rise was very true. Just before I headed off and became independent, I got involved in weapons of mass destruction, as Mr. Warren Buffett called it, and had a long position on a listed entity, which is the Goldman Sachs of South Africa at the time. It's called Peregrine, and the thing turned really badly against me, and I lost a couple of hundred thousand rand, just under $1 million in about 4 months.
Yeah, that's not anything that I think we want to wish on anyone.
And I think that was quite a good time to then, with quite a small balance sheet in hand, to go and start your own business from scratch. And that was the environment I found myself in. There have certainly been less stressful times in my life, let's put it that way.
And some of the issues that maybe you faced initially, how did you decide what direction you were going to go into as you were starting out?
Big step back. I'm obviously a huge fan of how technology can automate processes and how the computer can do the work. And I love efficiency and I hate waste. And that's what presented in the commercial property industry particularly presented quite a nice opportunity to do things differently, to do things better, to harness the power of technology. And that was a very strong competitive advantage, which I hope to leverage. I think to talk to the feelings, you obviously, I think there comes a point where your passion's activated and you don't really think, it's not too much of a intellectual decision. You've just got to go with your heart and get going. Hey?
Okay, so give us a little bit of background regarding G Mavens. You're speaking about data, you're speaking about property. That's where it all comes together, is it not?
So as with most businesses, success in commercial property is a function of three things: information, relationships, and efficiency. The quality of decisions is a function of the information at your disposal. Good information, good decisions. Poor information or incomplete information, and your probability of making a good decision is diminished. Secondly, when you talk to the efficiency component of business is highly competitive. Outcomes are binary. There's a very strong case for first mover advantage. The quicker you can turn around, the better your levels of service, the stronger your competitive advantage, and the more likely you are to provide a superior level of service compared to your competition. And then the relationship pieces, it's very important. The maxim business is about relationships is incredibly true. As men, to talk in generalizations, we're not as good at managing information about human beings in our brains. And so technology also can assist you with managing that third piece to your business.
Mm. Bringing in G-Maven?
G-Maven is effectively a fusion of two things, software as a service and big data. Software as a service talks to the automation, efficiency, the ability for businesses to focus on their core while the computer does the work in the background, assisting them in their core business. The data piece relates to the fact that businesses, specifically enterprises, require business information. If you're a fast food retailer, your business is about selling burgers, getting people in, marketing your brand. It's not about managing information, researching, pulling in external data against your internal data. And that's where we fortunately found ourselves in. We manage three data bases out there that are highly relevant to decision makers in a business environment. And the database of properties. We don't focus on residential property. There are other guys who do that better out there. Our focus is on commercial property. And these databases are all interconnected. Database of consumers. Again, the focus on high-end consumers. They tend to be directors of these companies, shareholders, influential players in these organizations. And finally, a database of the businesses themselves, either businesses who own the properties or businesses who happen to be tenants in the properties. That all lives in this umbrella of geopoints, being at shopping centers, schools, police stations, fire stations, hospitals, businesses being KFCs, Virgin Actives, McDonald's, engines, Shells. Collection of points becomes a path, so public transport arterials, things like your Gautrain bus, your BRTs, your IRT down in Cape Town, MyCity bus, and then extending to fiber routes. And then the final P is what we call polygons, and these are things like business nodes, so defined areas, what Sandton CBD looks like, or what Centurion looks like, or catchment areas relevant to specific businesses and assets out there. As you can see, we're very deep down the data rabbit hole. Businesses is all about competitive advantages, and businesses achieve these competitive advantages by focusing on their core competencies and obviously by pulling in best breed experts to assist them in their in aspects of their business that are very important to their business, but that are non-core. And so certainly we cannot sell burgers like McDonald's, and we can't move fuel like Shell, and we can't do property like Redefine, but we can certainly assist them with all the other moving parts that's non-core to their business.
So if I meet you in an elevator, give me the pitch. Give me the two lines.
We make businesses win, and we do this by helping them with data and making the computer do the work.
Great pitch. because that really leads me into a whole bunch of different questions, part of which you've answered here. All right, so let's move away from GMaven and the business itself, and let's talk a little bit about you, because that's really what this discussion is all about. We've got a community of young entrepreneurs, young executives who are trying to do their very best to grow their businesses and fast-track their careers. You are in many ways an icon to them. A first question. In your mind, what does it take to be a CEO?
Okay, and that's a good question. The best response is one word, and it's humility. As a CEO, you have to accept that you're going to be jack of all trades and master of none. There are going to be people in your organization in many of the verticals and in the businesses that you're involved in who will be superior to you in their spaces, and you'll be outshone by them, and you'll be outshone by them on a daily basis. You have to accept this, and you have to encourage this, and to do this, you have to be humble. David Ogilvy of Ogilvy & Mather had a lovely gesture when he appointed a head of an office in the Ogilvy & Mather chain. He'd send them a box with Russian dolls, those dolls that are large and smaller, and you sort of fit them all into each other. And inside the smallest doll, you'd find a little note written by him personally, and it says, if each of us hires people who are smaller than we are, we shall become a company of dwarfs. But if each of us hires people who are bigger than we are, we shall become a company of giants.
Fantastic.
That's a really good principle. I think the second point about what does it take to be a CEO, there's a fantastic book written by a guy called Ben Horowitz of Andreessen Horowitz, a top VC firm in the Valley in the States. It's called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. And there's three jobs that a CEO has to do and three ways to evaluate a CEO. Does the CEO know what to do? And that's made up of two legs, strategy and then the speed and quality of decisions. Second piece is, can the CEO get the company to do what he or she knows? And that's composed of many moving parts. It's building a quality team, having a clearly defined mission, and creating an environment that facilitates contribution of human beings and creating an organization that is structured to scale and grow. And then finally, and possibly less relevant, but does the CEO achieve the desired results against an appropriate set of objectives? The last point on that is probably just Peter Drucker's insights, the fact that business has only two functions, marketing and innovation. If you can keep a focus on those two and execute on these, then you're fulfilling your biggest, most important mandate.
Mm. Oh, very nice. Very, very good comments. Thank you very much. So your development journey is very important to our community, our future CEOs. There have to have been some mistakes that you've made along the way. Most CEOs actually just laugh and say there's been a lot of mistakes that they've made along the way. Would you mind sharing a couple of those with us? Maybe before you started your own thing, maybe after, it's up to you. And just some of the lessons that you learned.
I have made mistakes, and I suppose it's how you respond and react to them which is important. Charlie Munger's got an exceptional speech where he talks about the 24 errors of human judgment. And I think a lot of mistakes will be around deluded thinking or inability to be pragmatic or assess situations correctly. One of them is probably just, I tend to be optimistic by nature. I think all entrepreneurs at heart are optimistic. And it's, I think often you perceive other people's actions through your veil of values. And oftentimes it's difficult to be incredibly pragmatic when evaluating the data you've been providing by people's actions. A very good example of this is that when the frog's taking the scorpion over a river, and obviously the frog's giving the scorpion a lift, and the scorpion's at the frog's mercy. Unfortunately, halfway through, the scorpion stings the frog, killing the frog and drowning the scorpion. And while they're busy gasping for air, the frog asks him why he did it, and the scorpion just says, well, that's what scorpions do. We sting people. Mm. That's quite a good lesson about predicting how things will unfold and being pragmatic in your responses.
Mm. Do you have an example or two from your own history?
I think getting in business with mates and trying to do guys favors, thinking more with your friendship brain than your business brain. Oftentimes you can be overly optimistic and attempt to put square pegs into round holes. You're not doing anybody any favors. There's a good maxim that says, hire slow, fire fast. Apparently nobody's ever regretted firing someone too early. Yeah, sometimes you've got to make hard calls and frankly not bullshit yourself and the people involved, because it's a two-way thing.
Mm.
And I think as you go and experience, you hopefully become a better judge of people and are they best deployed in organizations that you're responsible for. And for their own good and yours, you often have to make a quick call, and it's sometimes a hard call to make.
What you have just mentioned, doing business with friends, is a very difficult place to be. And so we really appreciate your comments regarding that, because I would say that there are very, very few businesses that certainly I've come across that have worked out where you are in business with a friend. But as a result of, and you've just said it, thinking with the friendship brain versus thinking with a business brain.
Mm. So there are a couple of responses to that. The best thing to do is to have a very clear understanding of your strengths, your weaknesses, your red buttons, your values, and your longer-term objectives. There's a lot of merit in having an unromantic conversation up front. Exploring these things, it'll save a lot of pain down the road. And as also another saying goes, some of the best deals are the ones you don't do. Along with that, there's some really good shareholder agreements, which also define a lot of the expectation gaps and eliminate communication gaps up front. And you can cover yourself with vesting. You can cover relationships with definitions of KPIs and roles and responsibilities. And it eliminates all the sort of magical fairy dust, but it also makes for a far tighter and better relationship. Saying that, there's some wonderful businesses formed between friends. And interestingly, you see a lot of successful businesses run by brothers for some reason. That those tend to work quite well, interestingly.
No, that is interesting. What you just mentioned, now this is not necessarily business related, but certainly relationship related, and in businesses there are relationships. But one of the biggest causes for relationship breakdown is unmet expectations.
Sure.
And so your comment in terms of developing or creating expectations, KPIs you mentioned as well, is a very good point. So I hope everyone that is listening carefully, because we're getting some good insight here.
Without all the hard-won school fees.
Yeah, exactly. What don't leadership and management books teach about being a CEO? So you started a company, you've grown the company. You've moved from perhaps being a specialist to being a bit more of a leader. What don't these books, or aren't they able to share or encapsulate about that journey?
Gareth, I'm going to go with the unpopular answer here, and I'm actually going to say not much, to be honest. But then you have to know where to find the right books and the right data. There's so much good literature out there. Amazon has got an amazing recommendations engine, and there's some fantastic researchers of business information who you can leverage off to provide you with some really good insights. I mean, the beauty of a book is it'll take someone a lifetime to accumulate the knowledge, and you can consume it all in 12 to 16 hours. And there are people who have, by virtue of the free market, who have covered many topics in business, and people who are far brighter than myself. I can't talk for you with all this information out there.
So from a technical perspective, perhaps we can, as you say, take a lifetime of information and experience, and it's condensed and it's accessible to us. From a transitional perspective or point of view, you moving from being a specialist to having to manage people, what has been your experience in terms of that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there are a lot of head boys of schools who've gone on to be head boys of businesses. At school, I wasn't a prefect. I played pretty poor sport. I did my best, but I just didn't have the raw materials. So it's interesting. I wasn't really primed to be a leader. I think it's just about having quite a clear understanding at a deep fundamental level about having worked, I think, in organizations and seeing what presses your buttons and what aggravates you. I think it's quite simple. You've got to be a learner. You've got to constantly try and improve yourself and better yourself. You have to lead by example. You've got to be extremely consistent, and you've got to have quite a clear idea of your values in your business, and you've got to support those values and really honor them.
So your biggest light bulb moment is you have now come into this role of CEO, an aha moment, as they call it?
I'm quite a soft person, so I suppose I'm allowed to be demanding. I'm allowed to be quite specific in how I want things, and expect as compensation for salary, people to toe the line and to deliver their part of the reciprocal salary relationship. I would say that another one is, especially when you're running your own business and the financial stresses mount and it's an incredibly pressured and stressful environment, you just have to almost transition to to a space of acceptance and faith, and somehow down manage your stress around finances. If you can do that, it will change things. And again, you've got to be incredibly naive. But if you believe that you do things on a fundamentally good level and try and do really deeply good things with your business, the universe will somehow support that and reinforce that. And I've found the more that I've pulled towards that way of doing things, the more that I've looked for business opportunities and pursuits in that space, the more the universe has responded and assisted. We're not sitting around here and cross-legged, burning incense, but that's yeah.
If you were, I would definitely be sharing it with the listeners. So unfortunately, we don't have that kind of backdrop for this conversation. What is interesting is, and you've already answered the question because I wanted to ask, it's quite interesting how someone that's dealing with data speaks about faith. But you've answered the question, so thank you for doing that. Anything else you want to add to that?
I think, yeah, I mean, aha stuff is on the back of good advice, and people get good advice every day, and those aha moments happen every day, but you've got to be prepared to learn out there. I've had some good mentors in my life. I'm blessed to be mates, frankly, with an oak called Paul Smith. He's a Rhodes mate and a former Springbok rower and a absolute cowboy, but he's a fanatical researcher and a hugely impressive individual. And his big obsession is with small ventures, and he's a treasure trove of insights and thoughts and best practices. He's doing tremendously well, engaged with Microsoft and FNB and Alan Gray's Orbis, focused at Shanduka, focused on the smaller, on the early stage in businesses. And there's fantastic best practices you can leverage off with guys like that if you can find them, if you can get access to them.
Sounds like he's going to have to be on Future CEOs at some point. Thanks for the name. Please finish the sentence. As a CEO, my highest priority every day is?
Yeah, it's to ensure my team, made up of unique people, are best deployed. Simple. And the reason for that is we are all unique individuals, unique people. We've all got strengths and weaknesses and talents that we've been given. And my job is to understand my team and to attempt to position them in their unique shaped hole that they fill in this organization so that they can blossom and flourish and grow. That's pretty much my highest priority every day.
Mm, very nice. What's the best advice you've ever received?
I think the one is business is about relationships. Standard school stuff, do someone a favor, be a nice guy, it comes back to you. Look after Oaks. There's that serenity prayer, which I think is a piece of advice available to all of us, and it's generally not spoken, written down, but it says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Mm. And if you focus on that, you tend to be able to concentrate on the things that you can control and not waste a lot of energy stressing out stuff that's outside of your control.
Mm. So then what one habit do you attribute to your success? I hear you on the prayer. Does that then come into your habits as well?
Look, I'm a phenomenal dancer. No, I'm not.
I was not expecting that answer. That's a first. Thank you.
I'm also a brilliant lover, but I'm... Dude, I think the one habit is there is no substitute for hard work. Absolutely none. Outcomes in business are binary. You either win or you lose. Business is hugely competitive. And if your competitor and his organization are working 80-hour weeks and you're working 82-hour weeks and you're doing that consistently day after day, those small gains compound and you will ultimately come out on top. Another one is focusing on the small things. If you get the small things right, then the big things follow.
Hey? Yeah, they do take care of themselves, don't they? What are your three pillars of CEO leadership?
Good. Be consistent.
Yeah.
Lead by example. And empower excellence.
Yeah, you mentioned that a little bit earlier. Anything you want to add? But just some broad strokes, maybe just as a reminder.
Hmm. I suppose it's also, it all comes down to values. That whole model that most businesses follow. You need to have one sort of inspiring, big, hairy, audacious goal that sort of sits on top, and your values are front and center of everything. So your values inform your goal, and your values also inform your KPIs down the line and how you structure your business down the line. So I think a fourth pillar of leadership.
Okay, please add, yes.
A strong focus on corporate values. I mean, our values are very clear. They excellence. We want to be number one. Our second value is we're here to serve. It's tremendously fulfilling to serve and help people, and it gives richness and meaning to your life. It allows you to work in a corporate environment, but feel incredibly rich as a human being. The third value is team is very important to us, and our team isn't only our team members, but it's our people outside of our organization, our customers, our suppliers. Yeah, the world is very much about relationships and people, and the team piece is critical. Our fourth value is extreme personal development. It's an incredible engine to activate in human beings. If you believe in someone and you equip someone with the tools and you support someone, and you genuinely support someone, it's an amazing engine that you start that never ends. That person will constantly, independently of you, just be striving and growing and accomplishing things. And it's hugely inspiring to everyone around them. So that's our fourth value. And fifth value is innovation pioneering. There's always a better way to do something. It's hugely exciting to be doing things, knowing you the first people involved in it. It doesn't matter whether you're an accountant or you in the marketing space or whether you're in the HR space or whether you're in a software engineering space. You can always do things better and innovate and pioneer. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
When it comes to values, there often is, certainly in large corporates or large businesses, that's a writing on the wall.
Yes.
Versus something that you really believe. How have you been able to pull it from just something that sits on the wall to something that people really feel and believe?
The hardest thing about values, and I can attest to this because I was hugely influenced when I read some Jim Collins stuff when I was in India, and I spent about 4 or 5 days just nonstop on a beach in Goa, just trying to muscle through what are the values in our organization. And I got to them, but it's a hugely introspective process. It's a hugely time-consuming process. Values have got to be incredibly sincere. And if there's a lot of sincerity and personal weight behind those values, then I believe they will penetrate the organization.
And transfer through, and there will be ownership even behind them.
And then you'll get ambassadors for those values within the organization.
What should future CEOs be studying over and above university qualifications or some advanced degrees that are certainly pushed really hard out there in the market?
So education is an incredibly profitable industry, and it's going to be disrupted. But you can understand the pressure that's placed for our young people out there to get a formal education, and I'm a huge advocate of it. But certainly outside of a formal education, there are some incredible resources, great students of business who've devoted a tremendous energy, delivered incredible research, and identified wonderful insights relating to business practices. The books, they're sitting on Amazon. You simply need to start with a couple good books, and the ratings engine will drive further exploration. You will generally find bright guys will have good books for you, and they'll have good recommendations for you.
So you've given us a really good resource. In your opinion, what subjects should they be focusing on?
Yeah, it's weird, hey, because business is not, it's about many things, and it's about yourself as much as it is about your competitors. It's about your team as much as it's about macro, political, or economic factors. The question is about what books would I recommend?
Yeah. What subjects would you recommend?
Yeah, so again, I mean,
I liked your answer, by the way. Yeah. I was going to just follow it up with great answer, but you haven't finished it yet, so.
What did you say, great answer? Oh, perfect. I mean, I think you probably want to hack. You want to do a bit of philosophy. You want to do a little bit of economics. And then you want to just get into the business of business. Books I'd recommend, Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand was hugely influential when I was younger. On a personal level, I found The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle incredibly illuminating and provide a lot of clarity to the way I saw the world. The Jim Collins stuff is excellent. There's a great book called Crucial Conversations. Tribal Leadership is good. Malcolm Gladwell did some really nice stuff with really accessible stuff with Outliers, Stephen Covey's Hell of a Simple. There's some heavyweight MBA reading material out there. There's a book called The Sovereign Individual by two chaps called Davidson and Rees-Mogg, which is very interesting in terms of where the world's going. The most important thing is don't read crap books. Don't waste your time on books that are inferior, because it's an absolute waste of your time and energy to invest in books that aren't good. So definitely do your research before you prepare to get an invest. I'd say anything from 10 to 20 hours in a book.
Mm, very nice. So we're winding in our conversation at this point. Perhaps we can ask you to do two things. First, give yourself a little bit of counsel. Go back in time to when you were 20, 21, 22 perhaps, and give yourself a little bit of counsel. What would you say to yourself, knowing what you know now? And then maybe just a final question is really open-ended. What are just some final thoughts that you'd like to share with those who are listening?
I think the advice to me, and every person is so different, and we've all got our strengths and our weaknesses and our vulnerabilities. I'd probably say just probably believe a little bit more in yourself. Hey? That's probably the advice I would have given to myself. I think something else also that guys growing up must realize is that there's so much value in learning how to think, and there's in thinking. There's so many people who avoid thinking, and thinking is hard. There's a reason why IBM had this massive think sitting in their offices, just five letters, just sitting in a massive sign in their offices, because thinking is what people do not like to do, and it's so valuable. Other bit of advice is life is hard, eh? And specifically how the forces at play in our capitalist environment have structured things, you're either going to be the bug or the windscreen, and you must make some hard sacrifices early on if you're going to avoid being the bug. The world's not a friendly place, it's a hard place, and if you want to get through it and be successful, you've got to be able to take a lot more pain than the next man and have a very strict adherence to values. But you won't see the benefits in 5 years, but you will certainly start seeing the dividends paying the further and the deeper you go.
The only thing, if I may, just to bring balance to those people who got stuck on something that you said, which is that the world is a hard place, I would hate for them to walk away from this conversation and think, yeah, no, I need to be a really hard person. You're not a hard person. You said that you are actually quite a soft person, but there are non-negotiables in life. So how have you balanced the world is a hard place with perhaps being a little bit, you described it as soft, so I'm going to use soft. How have you balanced that out?
Thank you, Gareth. So I'm going to answer your question diversion. I'm going to go back to it. And there's an incredible book called Getting to Yes. It's a book by the Harvard Negotiation Project. So Harvard, excellent resource of business books. And Getting to Yes talks about negotiation. And the illuminating thing is that negotiation does not have to be hard. In fact, ineffective negotiating is being hard. The point of this book is to, and it was fascinating to me, is actually to be creative and to empathize with the other person and to work together versus against. Going back to the world is a hard place, the reality is you don't have to be hard to succeed in this world. That's the most important thing. Mm. And what I found is amazing is the higher up in organizations you go, the warmer, more engaging, more kind, more good and pure-hearted the people are.
It's a key point that the perception is otherwise, but that's a key point because it's so true.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The higher up you go in these organizations, you actually appeal to humans on a fundamental level, and that's the language that they talk and understand. What's tough is when you sort of in the lower rungs of an organization where there's a whole bunch of politics and vendettas and the sort of rats in the bucket scenario. That's very hard. I wish I had the advice of that. I've unfortunately managed to circumvent all that. I'm a very poor political animal, and I'd be eaten alive in a corporate. And that's a fact.
Thank you for your insights and your added comments there. That's such an important point for all of us to be able to understand and to realize is that we really don't have to be what we see on TV or what perceptions really sometimes drive us to, the behavior that perceptions drive us to. We don't have to have that. We don't have to display it. So thank you for your comments.
It's a pleasure.
Will Harris, CEO of G Maven, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're in a very exciting environment, and we hope and wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, Gareth. It's been a real pleasure.
If you'd like to get in touch with Will Harris from G-Maven, you can find his contact details on the summary page on our website. I'm Gareth Armstrong. It's been great being with you again.
Thanks for joining us today on Future CEOs, and we hope you're feeling inspired and ready to take action. Head over to future-ceos.com for show summaries, recaps, articles, and other resources aimed at fast-tracking your rise to CEO status. To make it even easier for you, simply sign up for our weekly newsletter, and we'll keep you up to date on all interviews, special guest appearances, new developments, and more.